Good day, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Ainsworth Game Technology 2021 full year results investor conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. If you require any further assistance, please press star zero. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, CEO, Mr. Laurence Levy. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Kevin. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining me for the Ainsworth FY 2021 results conference call. Also on the line, I have Mark Ludski, our CFO. Together, we will be presenting the results for the full year FY 2021. I appreciate that you are all busy with results, so I will concentrate my remarks on the key points and the regional review. Mark will take you through the financials. At the end of the presentation, we would be pleased to answer any questions. Please note that all numbers Mark and I quote throughout the call are denominated in Australian dollars unless otherwise specified. Let me start on page five and highlight some key messages. Firstly, despite the challenging market conditions, I'm pleased to report Ainsworth delivered a much improved result for the second half of FY 2021. We pre-announced the headline result on 12th August, and the audited results are consistent with these preliminary results announced. Revenue in the second half of FY 2021 was 87 million, an increase of 21% compared to the first half. Adjusted EBITDA increased from 1 million to 14 million, and the loss after tax for half two, including 12.5 million of non-cash impairments, was 3 million compared to 50 million in the first six months. While these results don't reflect Ainsworth's real earning potential, they are, as I say, much better results than we reported for the first half, given the ongoing consequences of COVID-19. Secondly, despite the challenges of the pandemic across our regions, AGT today is well-placed for further recovery and long-term growth. We proactively took advantage of the opportunities the pandemic presented to enhance product development, streamline our cost base, expand our market presence, and strengthen our balance sheet. These initiatives have improved our financial results, and they also position us well for the future. As a major highlight, our North American business continues to perform well. U.S. markets have effectively reopened with minimal limitations now in place. We are pursuing new growth opportunities for our market-leading historical horse racing products in existing and new jurisdictions following the passing of new legislation. We are excited by the opportunities to extend MTD, which we acquired in early 2020, across new jurisdictions to drive new sales. We can also further promote the A-Star cabinet, which is still relatively new in the U.S., given the cancellation of trade shows and exhibitions through FY 2021. Our Australian business also made solid progress despite the recent lockdowns. The continued rollout of the A-Star cabinets, together with improved game content, helped drive sales. Certainly, the lockdowns have created an element of uncertainty, but encouragingly, our customers are maintaining their gaming floor capital investment programs. They have understood that they need to make sure they are competitive and properly resourced once venues reopen. We have a strong financial model with 28% of group revenues represented by recurring revenues. Sales from offshore markets contributed 76% of total revenue. Of significant note, we refinanced our banking facility in FY 2021, closing the year with a cash balance of 42.4 million. Since 30 June, our financial position has further strengthened. We have now received the initial exclusivity payment of $5 million from GAN for our online real money gaming in the USA. We also received full payment for the sale in July of 400 machines previously on participation at Kentucky Downs, thus allowing repayment of a further $10 million in borrowings. As I say, we are well-positioned for recovery and growth. Profit and loss summary. Let me turn to the results on page eight. It is very much a tale of two halves. Revenues are up 7% overall in FY 2021 compared to the prior corresponding period. This included a 38% increase in domestic sales for the year and a consistent performance in global markets. International sales gathered pace in the second half with a 28% improvement over the first half. Reported EBITDA was negative 26.6 million. This was made up of a loss of 36.8 million in the first half and a swing to a profit of 10.2 million in the second half. Within the headline number for the year, we incurred 11.5 million currency translation losses, and 41.7 million one-off non-cash impairment charges. This prudent decision to reset our balance sheet values relates to the Australian, rest of world, and Latin American business units. Underlying EBITDA. As shown on page 11, our reported EBITDA also included 4.2 million of JobKeeper subsidies, 3.3 million gain on the sale of a tract of land in Las Vegas, and 3.1 million of US employment retention tax credits. Adjusting for these, underlying EBITDA, a more reflective measure of our operational performance, was 15.5 million positive. This is a significant improvement from the 5.8 million in the prior corresponding period, and was effectively all realized in the second half of the year. Excluding currency and one-off items, including the impairment charges, the loss before tax was 17.1 million. This compares to a loss of 34 million in FY20. The board has decided not to declare a final dividend given the company's reduced results and the priority to ensure we maintain a strong financial position during these volatile conditions. I'll now go through the regional review and then hand over to Mark. North America. So let's move to page 18 and talk about our best performing business in North America. The North America region reported revenues of 88.5 million compared to 72.1 million in the previous corresponding period. This is an improvement of 23%. The annual revenue was made up of 41 million in the first half and 48 million in the second half. 44% of these revenues are recurring, which is an increase from 32% the year before. While markets in the US are open, it's effectively for domestic customers only. There is still some social distancing, and international visitation has been highly restricted. So given the impact of the pandemic, these are pleasing numbers. Gross profit increased by 20% to 60.1 million, and we saw some operating leverage with margin expansion. EBITDA rose by 38% to 50.9 million, and segment profit margins expanded to 44% for the year from 35%. I'll call out that our operating costs were tightly controlled in the year given the uncertain market conditions. We reduced our headcount in the Americas at the end of FY20 and were able to maintain the same employee numbers in FY21 despite the growth in sales. We sold 1,703 units. That's some 273 units more than the previous year. Our A-Star cabinet is beginning to build market awareness. Even though we launched the new hardware 18 months ago, the main trade shows, such as G2E, were cancelled last year. We haven't had the chance as yet to showcase how impressive it is. NIGA, in July 2021, was the first trade show where we could exhibit the A-Star cabinets in the Americas. And I'm delighted to say the customer response following the show has been strong, and we look forward to good sales going forward. As I've always said, game performance is critical to sustained success. We are pleased to note that Ainsworth continues to perform especially well with our high denomination games, with 8 of the top 25 best performing games in this category in the US. We are building on our established strength in this market based on the successes of our quick spin games. We are performing around 1.5 times house average with an extra 30% uplift on the A-Star hardware. This bodes well for the future. Our installed base of machines on participation closed the year at 2,712, representing a 17% growth on the PCP. The yield achieved on these units under gaming operation was on average $37 per day, an impressive increase of 42% compared to the PCP. This yield was strengthened by the contribution of HHR products within Kentucky. In July, after the balance sheet date, we closed the sale of 400 HHR machines that had been on participation at Kentucky Downs, leaving 50 under participation at this venue. These machines represented a mixture of cabinets, including the A-Star, and given the stronger performance achieved, they were converted to sale, as allowed by our contract. Under the sales agreement, we will earn ongoing connection fees of approximately $8 per day through FY22 and beyond. We have a very good relationship with Churchill Downs, and we continue to grow with them across their venues and into new sites. We will also expand our HHR footprint into new jurisdictions that have passed HHR legislation, such as Wyoming, Louisiana, and New Hampshire. Let me also touch on MTD. Despite COVID-19, the business has made a positive impact to EBITDA. Securing GLI approvals in new jurisdictions such as California, Arizona, Oklahoma, and New Mexico has understandably taken longer than we anticipated. But we also expect to add Nevada to this list during FY22. The opportunity to sell MTD's complementary product line with premium performing poker, keno, and video reel content across Ainsworth's broad array of jurisdictions is still highly appealing and is very much intact. It remains one of our key priorities for FY22. Turning to Latin America, on page 20. Latin America was seriously impacted by COVID-19. With high transmission rates, government-mandated closures, and access restrictions to customer venues in Mexico, Argentina, Peru, and beyond, it has been challenging and understandably affected our business. Revenues for the region were $18.3 million compared to $42 million in FY20, a reduction of 56%. Thankfully, we saw an improvement in the second half with revenues of $13.5 million compared to less than $5 million reported in the first half. Of the 625 machines we sold in the year, 514 were in the second half. I am quietly confident that as vaccination rates increase across the region and governments further relax restrictions, revenue opportunities will increase. These will include deferred sales and placements from previous purchasing decisions across the region. All indications are that we have passed the low point within the LATAM region. To be prudent, we have reviewed the revenue and cash flow projections in our LATAM cash-generating unit. We recorded a $24.7 million one-off impairment charge during the year. I'll mention that this is not in this segment profit result. On this slide, it is included in other expenses in the group's results. So what is our position on this market? With the right cost base, we can deliver profitable growth. There are encouraging signs that markets are beginning to reopen, such as Colombia and Argentina. The Caribbean is mostly open, and we are evaluating new growth markets such as Venezuela. We constantly review our credit measures to control the risks of collectability of these receivables. And as I highlighted earlier, recurring revenues do provide important support, making up 37% of the regional total. I now turn to Australia and the rest of the world. On page 21, you can see Australia delivered a good result with a greatly improved performance over the prior year. New hardware and recently released game titles resulted in 38% revenue growth and 15% growth in EBITDA. We saw revenue growth in all states except Victoria due to their extended lockdowns. We enjoyed successful placements of A-Star dual screen cabinets and the release of new game brands such as Rise Up, Jackpot Coin, and Players Paradise Grand across domestic markets. You might be surprised to hear unit volumes increased by 63% to 1,165 units. Our game performance has certainly lifted. There are some highlights on page 24 for you to see. Rio Grande Los Toritos is providing stability in legacy content. Pan Chang has continued with consistent results, boosted with the addition of the Guan Yu game. And new electric cash titles continue to do well. We also have a suite of new innovative products coming to market in the first half of FY22. As I mentioned earlier, the latest lockdowns in New South Wales and Victoria are creating uncertainty, but despite this, we still see customers directing capital investment to the gaming floor. They want to ensure they are competitively well-placed and appropriate, appropriately resourced for when these markets reopen. Our rest of the world segment also delivered a healthy revenue increase at 96% growth with higher profitability. EBITDA rose to 7.1 million from 3.2 million. We saw increased unit sales volume primarily in Europe and New Zealand via our well-established distributor network. Online revenue was up at 5.9 million, a rise of 28%, and now contributes 43% of the segment's revenue total. Following our successes releasing Ainsworth game content with several major real money gaming operators in New Jersey, we signed a 5-year exclusivity deal with GAN worth a minimum of $30 million, effective July 2021. Additionally, we have extended our social gaming agreement with Zynga, securing an important revenue stream moving forward. Before I hand over to Mark, I would like to finish by thanking all my colleagues at Ainsworth for their hard work through these challenging times, their resilience and dedication to our customers. I'm incredibly proud of the way the team at AGT has performed through these worrisome times, and I want to formally acknowledge this. On that, I will hand over to Mark to go through the balance sheet and cash flow.
Thank you, Lawrence. On slide 15, as Lawrence mentioned, it was a priority to ensure our balance sheet strength in FY21, and we made positive progress on this front. We have also seen further improvements since the close of the financial year. On page 15, you'll see we closed FY21 with a net cash position of $5.1 million. This is a $23 million from the $17.5 net debt position the previous year. The receivables closing balance of $116.4 million was a small increase of 2% due to higher revenue in the period. At 30 June, we had inventory of $56.1 million. This is down on the $91.4 million at the end of the previous year. This reduced figure reflects the realization of purchased inventory and the write-down of inventories relating to older-style cabinets. The reduction in the closing balance of total assets was also primarily due to the recognition of non-cash impairment losses related to property, plant and equipment, and leased assets across Australia, rest of world, and LATAM. As Lawrence highlighted, we refinanced our previous facility for $35 million US with Bank of Nevada, as we announced in February. The facility has a term of 5 years and has an option to increase to $50 million US, subject to bank consent. $28 million US of the facility was drawn down to retire all previous domestic debt obligations. Turning to page 16, we recorded strong cash flows in the second half, along with the careful management of expenses, resulting in an increase of 60% in cash held at the reporting date. Cash held of $42.4 million represented an increase of $15.9 million compared to the $26.5 million at the corresponding reporting date. You'll note a decrease in cash used in investing activities, which relates to the acquisition of MTD, A-Star product development being completed and released in February 2020, and the sale of surplus land at our Las Vegas facility. Since the end of the financial year, the cash balance has risen again. We received in July the initial $5 million US contribution from GAN Limited, as was announced, and we have received payment from the sale of 400 units to Kentucky Downs, as Lawrence highlighted. With our cash, we have ensured strong liquidity and a sound capital base moving forward. I will now hand back to Lawrence for some concluding remarks.
Thank you, Mark. As I said at the beginning, our results for the second half are much improved on the first half. We still have a long way to go to fulfill our earnings potential, but we are well placed for growth, particularly in North America, where we have good momentum. We are also purposely a different company to the one we were before the pandemic. We have deliberately taken advantage of the opportunities available to us over the last year to become more streamlined, more efficient, and more competitive. with our A-Star cabinet, high-performing games, and pipeline of new product development, we are well positioned for growth as more markets reopen and recover. The appointment of a new Chief Product Officer in October 2021 should assist to lead game development and deliver a pipeline of diverse, creative, and innovative game content across our global markets, ensuring further growth in revenue in coming periods. It reminds me of what I said this time last year. It has been an extraordinary, disrupted period, but there are encouraging signs and strengths too. Thank you for your time today. I will now hand back to our operator, Kevin, to open the lines for Q&A.
Thank you very much. As a reminder to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. To withdraw your question, please press the pound hash key. Please stand by while questions queue. Once again, it is star 1. Thank you. We have multiple questions in queue. Our first question comes from the line of Mr. David Fabrice from Macquarie. David, please ask your question.
Good morning, Lawrence. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, David.
Hi, David.
Hi. I've got a couple of questions, please. Just firstly, with the new Chief Product Officer, can we maybe understand more about his capability? Are his strengths aligned with Ainsworth's core products and historical success, or does he bring new skill sets to you guys that might allow you to enter new market segments? Maybe thinking about machine volatility and other bits and pieces, can you maybe just elaborate on what he brings to the roadmap and the outlook for that?
Yeah, I'm still being a little bit cautious because he's in a non-compete period with his previous company. But yes, he brings an enormous skill set. He has, a good history in the industry. And I think he has a software engineering background. He has a game development background. He has a great understanding of, I think, the importance of graphics, the importance of audio. He's been introduced to a few of our key members for conversations. So I think he's trying to catch up on the background he'll need when he starts. But no, I think he's going to give us a much more focused deliverable of games. Expanding on our strengths, which obviously in the US is on the high denom games, but also working through new concepts, new innovations that feed market trends and where the players' markets are kind of shifting. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, I think that's enough. I mean, we can reconvene those conversations in October once he starts properly.
Yeah.
Just on the second question, just trying to understand the game account network exclusivity for real money gambling in the US. I think on slide 27 of your pack, it talks about having multi-state agreements with 10 operators in the US. Is this through game account network directly or through Ainsworth? So how do we understand the whole agreement that's going on there?
Well, I think everything that's on slide 10 was initially agreements with Ainsworth directly. And now that we have the deal in place with GAN, those now flow through us to GAN, so all of those revenues go to GAN. But we have, an exclusivity agreement, and the agreement we've signed with them includes New Jersey, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And we have some earn-out potential, so if we hit certain annual and targets through the five-year period, we receive additional revenues for those, and also any other states or jurisdictions that come on would be negotiated on top of. So we see the $30 million US dollars over 5 years as a minimum that we can earn, and our expectation is that it will be stronger than that.
Got you. And considering how the games are performing with GAN currently, would it be safe to assume as they get licensed into new jurisdictions, you guys would enter new exclusive agreements with them and see additional revenues?
That's certainly the intention.
Okay, that all makes sense. Appreciate you answering those questions. That's all from me. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, it is star 1. Our next telephone question comes from the line of James Devlin from Henley & Company. James, please ask your question.
Yes.
I guess good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Jim. How are you?
Fantastic. And once again, Lawrence, I think you're doing a wonderful job. I think, you know, most of the time during your tenure, you've had to really, you know, you've had the wind kind of, you know, in your face, and where the balance sheet sits today compared to where it's been, you know, just even in the last 12 months. I mean, you guys should be very much proud of what you're doing and commended on the job you're doing. So,
thank you.
Just a couple of questions here. You know, obviously noticed you sold a little bit of real estate in Las Vegas, and I don't know if you guys have done it, but it compared to the spectrum of the acreage that you own there, have you ever brought to market the or trued up the value of the building and ancillary real estate?
I mean, at the beginning of COVID, when, you know, the whole world was extremely uncertain, we looked at every possibility of raising cash, holding cash. So, I mean, we looked at a sale leaseback, but it was not of interest or not necessary.
Jim, the indicative valuation is ahead of the book value currently held. You know, it would be in the vicinity of, you know, $50 million US, the land and the building.
That was $50 million, you said?
50 to 60 mil.
Okay, so that's an asset, right? And is that that has any mortgages or debt against it?
Well, the Bank of Nevada facility has security over that through the Ainsworth Inc. It's owned by AGT Inc., which is a U.S. wholly owned subsidiary, and they have security over that.
Okay. And then the second question I had, as it turned to page 28, I guess you guys are expecting to get involved in the internet gambling activity in Latin America involving the states of or the countries of Argentina, Colombia, Mexico, Peru. You're not taking any income in there now, but I guess there's 660 million residents in Latin America, and those are pretty big states, and one of the fastest growing populations in the world. What are your expectations there? When should we start seeing any of that activity impacting the balance sheet?
Yeah, well, we've gone live with one small operator in Mexico in the last couple of weeks. And yes, we're moving into Colombia. It's quite a slow process just to get game approvals through there. But I think, yes, I think through the year that'll start to build up. We're going through with there's companies that we've already integrated our games with, so we kind of go together with those companies, so we don't have to rebuild the games every time. But the expectation is I think just a slow build up over 2022 and beyond.
Okay, I mean, you have a strong background from Novomatic in Latin America. I mean, ultimately, right, if you had a long vision for what Latin America could be. I mean, is it a sizable business?
It's a competitive business as well, and it's been largely kind of dominated by some of the international companies. So I think each country and jurisdiction is just trying to make sure that they're getting the taxes that they should within their jurisdiction for play. So it's just, I think, working through with the regulators to make sure that it's operating as it should. And that's what we want to do is go in the properly regulated markets.
And Jim, I think another important point within LATAM is we have we've done exceptionally well in those regions over time. So we've got very strong brand recognition. So to pursue online digital opportunities, you're going to leverage off that brand recognition.
Okay, wonderful. All right, Lawrence, again, thank you for your time, and best of luck, and looking forward to 22.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Once again, it is star one. Our next telephone question in queue is from Steve Emerson from Emerson Investment Group. Steve, please ask your question.
I want to thank you and your whole team for excellent work during difficult times.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
What steps have you and your board decided on to seek a listing in the U.S.?
None at all at the moment. I think those are, you know, those we look at every option constantly. Every board meeting we look at options, but no action.
Okay, but of course you're aware that that could significantly help your valuation.
I'm aware you've given me these recommendations through calls that we've had previously, and those have been passed on. But yes, at the moment,
I think Steve, I think the board evaluates all strategic opportunities, which you know includes a potential U.S. listing, relocating various operational processes, you know, and trying to reduce operating costs and leverage profitability. So they evaluate all those strategic opportunities. However, you know, no concrete view has been established at this point.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, it is star one. Our next telephone question is from Arnold Myatt from Empire State Financial. Arnold, please ask your question.
Hi, how are you doing, guys? Awesome to know that these game titles are really exciting. I just want to tell you that I've played a couple of them. I'm calling from Empire State Financial, so New York coming to Australia. I had one question on the land of property, and can you explain it a little better in the Nevada and Australia, and I think you have a Florida complex. Can you just explain the debt that's involved, or do you own it outright, or is it 20-year mortgage? Or is, you know, can you just go through that a little bit with me?
Yep. Okay, so we own the Florida premise. We also own the Las Vegas land and facility. They're owned outright. However, we have a banking facility through Bank of Nevada, which and they have security over the assets of Ainsworth Game Technology, Inc., which is the U.S. subsidiary. The Australian business is leased premises, and with the change in accounting standards, it's categorized as right of use and capitalized on the balance sheet.
Okay. And so on the Vegas land, just go through one more time with me being a little bliss here. The property's leased, you own it, is it mortgaged? Just, you know, just refresh me and I'll let you go. And I know
there's no mortgage over the property, but it is attached to security for the Bank of Nevada borrowing facility.
Okay, so it's not owned outright?
It is owned outright.
There's no mortgage
attached to it, but it is secured as part of the Bank of Nevada credit facility.
Okay. And I guess that's my last question. And again, congratulations. Really love the games and love the new effort you're putting in through the whole pandemic. Pat yourself on the back. It's been a rough going for everybody.
Thank you, Arnold.
Okay,
thank you.
And keep the good work.
Thank you. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Arnold.
And once again, if you wish to ask a question, it is star one. There's no more further questions at this time. I'd like to hand the call back to Lawrence for any closing remarks. Please go continue.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Yes, just thank you to everybody. We appreciate your interest in Ainsworth. And the final word really is just stay safe and have a nice day.
Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect. Have a great day.